Welcome to Beauty as a Birthright, a podcast where we decode the evolving concept of beauty from a multidimensional lens. In this space, we embark on a journey with engaging guests from all walks of life to figure out if beauty is a birthright, then what's our legacy? So let's get started. Leah Abramson is an open-hearted soul, Bay Area native, aspiring editorial model, currently located in the Los Angeles community, and a recent graduate from UCLA with a degree in gender studies. Leah comes from a multiracial background from Russia, Lithuania, Sierra Leone, and parts of India. As an inspiring model, diversity coordinator, fashion fanatic, dancer, and music lover, Leah is currently detoxing from the madness of her long academic career in hopes to continue her spiritual journey to guide her towards a genuine and creative career path ahead. Welcome, Leah.
Hi.
We also forgot to say Leah was also an intern for our podcast through a program at UCLA. So we're so excited to like get to chat with you just one-on-one.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. This is my first like podcast.
Yay. Yeah. First of many now.
Yeah.
We wanted to grab you before you just blew up, you know? Because we know like it's gonna happen. We're like, we better get on her like before she can.
Thank you. I'm very flattered.
So Leah, you know, because you've been listening and helping us so much in the beginning of our podcast, and you listened to all our episodes and helped us with editing and stuff. So, you know, we kick off our episodes asking our guests, what is the most beautiful thing about you today?
Yeah, I was so funny. I was like moving around, like doing some yoga this morning, and I was like, they're going to ask me that. And I like, don't know, but I feel like the most beautiful thing about me today is, I think, just my perseverance. I've been really proud of lately. So I'll go with that.
I love that. Like,
you know, going head first, just like, you know what? Throw it at me. So
yeah.
I feel beautiful in that sense for sure.
That's really, you know, so many of our guests have been giving us answers about their strength and resilience. And I love that. I love this, like how this endurance and stamina and ability to adapt to what comes our way in life has meant a lot, has shown people a lot of their own beauty and strength and power. Sure. So Leah, you have such a diverse racial background, and it's like when I read it and hear it and look at you, I feel like I see all of those things. But I want to know if you identify with one more than another, or how your appearance as a mixed race person has influenced your identity, and you know, whether or not you see yourself appearing as one more than the other.
Absolutely. I really love that question. I have a very interesting relationship, I feel like, with my racial background, because I actually wasn't really introduced to it in a way that I was able to have open conversations about it with my family, because it just wasn't really addressed. Like, we didn't really have any of the talks of just like, you know, like, you look different than other people, like, this is where we come from. Like, I don't know. And I don't even know if like families have those talks, but I know part of my racial background is just not something I grew up discussing with my family. And so I feel like I kind of just dealt with it on my own for a long time. And then I luckily met a lot of beautiful friends who introduced me to, you know, communities that I didn't even know I was like a part of, you know? It's definitely been like a more so like lonely process, I feel like, addressing different sides of my racial background, because I know too, because of that, especially on my mom's side, my mom is half Black and half Indian, and then my dad's white. And so I know, I'm not sure necessarily if the relationship that my mom has with her racial background has anything to do with it, but I know that her upbringing was definitely more rough than she enjoys to like talk about, and has definitely kind of separated myself and my sister from, you know, that side of her and ultimately her family. And so I think because of that, when I was younger, I definitely identified more with my white side just because that was what I was around. But as I got older, especially like late middle school and high school, when I really got involved in, you know, my Black community, and I started doing different types of ethnic dance and everything, I really opened my eyes to like, wow, this is like a huge, huge part of me that I wish I had more familiarity with. So I feel like I definitely just, yeah, I built, you know, my own relationship with it in a way that I kind of just had to teach myself and was also taught through my social circle. So yeah, I would say now I definitely identify more so with my white and Black side. My Indian side, I don't really have any relationship with. I don't know anybody on that side of my family. It's not really talked about amongst my family, but I would definitely like to know more about it.
Have you been curious about exploring that part?
Absolutely. I think just with the barriers where it comes from on my mom's side, I know how like triggered she gets by even mentioning anybody around that side. So me and my sister, we just don't like push any of those buttons. Like we don't really mention it, just to respect my mom's, you know, her seriousness with it. But yeah, at the same time, you know, it's part of my identity. It's part of how I grew up. So yeah.
Did you grow up in a diverse neighborhood that like,
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you identifying as white wasn't maybe that like,
I mean, I feel like even though I identified more with my like white side of my family, honestly, I feel like when I was little, I didn't identify myself with race, period. You know, I think the default of race kind of goes to that white side, you know, especially when you're growing up, which is maybe why I say that. But yeah, race in general just like wasn't really discussed.
And kids didn't like treat you differently because you were so diverse?
Differently. That's okay. Weird. Yeah. But I kind of just like, I think I kind of just brushed it off or didn't really think much of it because it wasn't an area that I was familiar with. Everybody in my family also has like covered in freckles. And when I was little, I literally thought there was dirt on my face. Like not in like a sad way, but I just would like be in the bathroom. Like, what is on my face? Like what is going on? But then I would look at like my family and I was like, do they have dirt on there? Like, are we like a dirty family? Like, it was so funny. But yeah, no, my dad has freckles all over his body, and then my mom has them all over her face, and then my sister.
Oh, cute. Like,
10 times.
Wow. And now everyone wants freckles.
Oh, yeah. I could get into a whole conversation about like freckle tattoos and all that stuff. Yeah, no, it's weird. Yeah, my relationship to race, it's definitely way more part of how I identify and just how I move around the world. But at the same time, I think my upbringing with it wasn't really existent. So that made an interesting disconnect. And there's still so many moments, of course, where I feel like I'm new to that scene. I've luckily been able to study it, you know, and really be involved with it with a lot of my friends, of course, but you know, finally having, I think, just like a pinpoint to like why I feel like people may look at me differently or just like, you know, say certain things. When I was little, I just didn't know how to navigate that. So it was very confusing.
Yeah. Paige, because you're biracial and multicultural, like did your family talk about race growing up?
So in Hawaii, we talk about race all the time. Yeah. It's just something that we love to talk about. Yeah. And I think
why is that?
So there, basically Hawaii was initially colonized by Portugal. And then a lot of workers were brought over from Asia and they worked on the plantation. So they worked the sugarcane fields, the coffee fields, pineapple fields, coffee fields. So the crops that Hawaii is really known for. And so people from Japan and China and the Philippines and Korea were all living and working on these plantations. And so they had to bond with one another by one coming up with their own kind of like Creole, which is what we call pidgin in Hawaii, to communicate, but two, to kind of like learn about one another's cultures, but also tease one another about it. Like that was how they were bonding.
That's so Asian.
Yes. And so that just completely has infused the local culture of Hawaii today, where we are constantly like poking fun at one another and teasing each other and making light of our differences, but also from a lens of appreciation and understanding. And I think that's very unique because on the US mainland, you can't really get away with that because the history is a lot different. And so it would be seen as like offensive or insensitive to make the same type of jokes at different races. But anyway, we talk about it all the time here.
And in Hawaii, it's like something you don't see in the mainland as often. And I think now it's sort of changing is mixed race Asians. Like, especially my generation growing up, like you would never on the mainland see somebody, actually, no, my good friend, which was so weird. Like he was Korean and Japanese. And that's like, whoa, because of the history of Korea and Japan, yeah. You know, but in Hawaii, that is common. Like you, right. You're interracial of Asians, like mixing race.
And exactly. And that goes back to those plantations. And they were all living there together. So it was inevitable that that was going to happen. And so many of those stories come from the generations meeting at the plantation and forming a family.
Yeah.
I think too, the relationship between race and beauty then is, you kind of see how that develops through these like historical events, you know? And I feel like too, with my, where I guess I came from in terms of what I just assumed to be beauty standards and those then not being reflected on, you know, the part of me that's African American or the part of me that's from an Indian culture is that like, yeah, my mom and my sister like have been straightening their hair literally since I can, like as long as I can remember. So I did that, you know, like from when I was first able to, like early middle school, like all the way up until like late high school, until I got introduced to more of my community. And then, yeah, kind of was, I learned and I was just like, this is hurting me. Like, this is, there's so many other parts of me. And for some reason, I'm just thinking, I've convinced my brain that yeah, like this is how I should be looking and I should change that. And I feel like similarly to what you both said in terms of, you know, these different, you know, cultures that coincide with each other, I feel like in a way too with, you know, this merging, I think at least what we can see with like a white and a black merging in a way, like how that translates into like what beauty standards we then, you know, feel we need to express versus just like, yeah, how we feel. So
yeah,
it's a weird process.
Yeah, I mean, I think like reading your background, Leah, and then seeing you, I was just like, whoa, this is the future. This is what future looks like. It's not just being biracial, it's being multiracial, multicultural.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool. Like, it's just, it's like,
no, it's, I mean, it's literally an embodiment of like intersectionality, I think.
Exactly.
Like, it's literally what that word is pointing to and how all of these cultures can literally be like morphed into this like person
human being
walking around. Yeah, like, it's crazy. It's really
well,
weird.
Let's talk about your studies because.
Yeah.
You graduated in gender studies and when I first, I mean, when we first met, I was like, what is this? And then when you were explaining, I was like, oh my God, I want to go back to school and I want to study this. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about what gender studies entails? And then has this influenced your perception about beauty in the world and within yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like what's really, gender studies in itself is a very beautiful yet frustrating degree, I think, to be in, especially like I didn't start out in gender studies. I first was going to go into psychology and really was unhappy with just how outdated it was and very just like cis white male centered it was, and found a lot of issues with, you know, topics regarding mental health to then be centered around, you know, not specifically to, you know, different cultures and stuff, which is then when I found gender studies. And I feel like I, like finally finishing the degree, I finally understand what it entailed. Like, cause so many people would ask me like, yeah, why did you switch? And I knew why I did, because it was just kind of the thing where like with the classes you take, like you just had to be there. Like it's so dense, like you just had to be there. Like it's hard to sum up, but I think what I've taken away from it and what I feel like is important for why everybody should at least take, you know, a class in it or two, is because it helps to reprogram your brain to critically think everything, like yeah, every kind of policy, you know, social interaction, just thought that you have in your brain, and makes you reevaluate, you know, why, okay, I learned this thing. Why did I learn it in the way that I did? Who am I learning it by? What was happening, you know, at the time when this was introduced into education? Like it literally helps to study and theorize why we've chosen to look at knowledge, power, you know, all of these really big things that our society's built on, why it's set up the way it is, and how in itself it specifically tries to keep white power as a basis for the world and for your ability to succeed.
Isn't it weird? Like, this is what we should, like, this should, we should have been taught how to do this from like day one in kindergarten, right?
Yeah.
And when you look at education, like, you know, I was teaching a doctorate class and I spent most of the time teaching these students that are much older, mm-hmm, training to be doctors, to think critically.
Yeah.
Just because it's published in a scientific journal doesn't mean anything, well, right? It's so like
important about the aspect of like credit and criteria and, you know, peer reviewed. So much too of gender studies is with that ability to critically think. You're reevaluating what is like accepted as right and wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like to like universally accept that like, oh, this is a fact. Like, not really. Like, yeah, it's just something we've all agreed on, you know? Yeah. So it's really,
and it could be right for, yeah, a certain group of people, but absolutely, not, that doesn't mean it's the truth, right?
Right. And it doesn't mean that it's the truth forever, I think, is like the biggest thing. Yes. And which is why I was so frustrated with psychology, because, you know, I'm like, wow, like I'm going to be able to study about mental health. And my dad's a therapist. And I always was attracted to just, yeah, like having conversations with people about their personal life. But like, I would sit there and kind of do unconsciously what we do in gender studies, which is just like, look at an assignment or a reading and just be like, so much is missing, I feel like. Like, I just feel like there's so much that I don't know about. And then when you get lumped into this super creative, fun way of learning, like in gender studies, it's pretty scary because, you know, we're analyzing such large parts too of like how we learn. Like, I took a class analyzing education as like a whole, and we basically spent the whole like semester like talking shit about like the educational system, and like we had a professor and we were all kind of felt bad because we're like, I'm sorry, like I know this is your job, and she's like, no, like this is the point. And I'm like, don't you feel like kind of bad? And she's like, no, it's great, it's so fun. So yeah, It's a lot. It's very, very dense, and I feel like thrown at you, like, all at once. But I really appreciate, at least in my department at UCLA, how genuine and connective the gender studies classes are, because all they really do too is try to relate anything they're talking about to your personal experience. And that, I think, is like always the best way to teach someone how to do something, you know, is how can I help, you know, this student relate this to their own experience or something going on in the world that, you know, they know about in their generation. Like, make it relevant. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, I know there's this big thing in education where it's like, oh, well, like, you may use this someday. Like, I promise you, I am not going to use a study done in 200 BC about, like, I don't care. Like, I don't. And I feel like that's totally valid and okay to bring up in an educational space. And I love that gender studies departments do that. Like, all the professors are always like, please give me feedback on, you know, what we're talking about. If you don't like what we're learning, tell me. I'll find something else that is more, you know, catered to you guys, you know, and something that interests you.
So how has this influenced your perception of beauty within yourself, or like how you see beauty in the world?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's expanded it, I think. It's expanded what I think can be constituted as beautiful. I definitely feel like it changed my perception of just how like narrow and fixed beauty can be. Because like I was saying with how just like concepts and the ways that people, you know, learn about the world and knowledge, that's always something that's changing. That's always something that's evolving. And so is beauty, you know? And so I feel like through my degree and through my classes at gender studies, we emphasize the parts of, you know, beauty and the parts of society that are purposefully overlooked, you know, are purposefully put into a box and like put aside, because I think institutions and people in power, they don't want, you know, difference. They don't want there to be differing opinions, sides. They want to just be like a one way, this is the right way that it's going to be, and this is how you should, you know, do it. But yeah, and it just opens a lot of doors, and it keeps that that sense of open-mindedness in the classroom too. Like, you then get more comfortable with other opinions, you know, and just accepting them for them, just agreeing to disagree, and that's okay. Like, we're not, there's always going to be some opposing side, even if there was one right way, in quote, that we may think there is. Like, no one, it's never going to be 100%. And I don't think it should. And beauty has so much to do with that also.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds like a lot of positive influences that came from, you know, this, what you're this long academic career. But you also mentioned, Leah, that you're currently detoxing from kind of the madness of having this long career. So we talked a bit about the positive impacts. I'm curious to hear if there have been adverse or negative influences from having come off of just graduating, and how it related to your beauty journey.
Oh yeah. We all know what's been going on the last 2 years with the pandemic and how unique of an experience it's been for everybody. But in my own personal experience, I'm also a transfer student from UCLA. So I was only able to be on campus in person for maybe like a semester in a year, like a very short amount of time. And I think that the uneasiness and the never ending, just like uncertainty of where I was to really stand, combined with like, okay, cool, I'm having these really connective, amazing conversations with these other students, but there still just seems to be some barrier that we've like started to touch on, I think, in the gender studies courses, but you know, it's not that open-mindedness and just that ability to fully connect with someone, I think has been diminished a lot. You know, I think people are really, really struggling right now. And in that way, and this goes for myself too, my ability to like be as social and extroverted as I remember being like in high school, kind of got lost. I had
because of the pandemic, you think, or?
I think just in my journey through college, like UCLA is my fourth university. I've moved around a ton. I have made very little, if not any, friends from college. I had a lot of like personal, just like issues go on in like my living situations with roommates and, you know, just like robbery and just a lot of outside, you know, issues going on while I'm in this like dystopian college experience that like I'm supposed to be having. So yeah, it just made me kind of just a lot, I don't know, I like to say too, like I feel like a lot of different parts of me like have died throughout the course of these last 4 years, 4 or 5 years in college. And with going back to like my ability to persevere, I think that it's definitely made me stronger, and I've slowly been getting to a point where I am appreciative of how rocky my journey has been with it, because I don't know, I just feel like it's made me think like I can kind of handle anything. Like, oh, man, if I can go through all of this, that's what I mean, like throw it at me, like I will deal with it, because I know that I can, and I know that my biggest like motto in life is it's happening for me and not to me. It's happening for me to become who I'm meant to be.
Where does that come from? Is that something that like that you grew up with, or is it something that you learned on just, I mean, it, cause you know, like, I feel like I meet two types of different people, you know, I have complex PTSD. And so I'm naturally drawn to other people who just have a really fucked up life. I'm like, cool, we speak the same language, you know? Absolutely. But as I come across them, I feel like there's two types. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine about this, because she's similar. And she said, I swear to God, I don't think I can handle another trauma. She's like, I'm done. Like, I don't want this anymore. I've had so many. Absolutely. And I think a few years ago, I've been like, yeah, like, I'm so tired of this. But in that moment, I was like, something clicked in my head. I'm like, actually, I could handle it. Not that I want to.
Yeah, right? We're not speaking it into existence.
No. But I can handle like more. It was such an empowering shift in my mind and my brain. And it was literally like how you said, like, I feel like, just come at me, bro. I have everything I can. I have all the tools to figure out how to process the next trauma. And if I don't, I know it within me that I will find a different way. Like, and I think it's like, I don't even know where that came from. So like, where did it come from for you? Like,
I mean, I think similarly to you, I think just like being forced kind of into these situations where I didn't really have a choice, you know, I feel like with what you said about tools and everything, I think that the more I've gone through the hard times and I've developed different ways to cope, you know, I can use those as kind of like, a backbone to like, okay, like I know these things made me feel good and helped me get through. But yeah, sometimes you're going to enter a new traumatic thing where you don't have tools that are familiar. But I think kind of in those discomfort and uncertain moments, that's where those new tools like really can be so revolutionary and so helpful to you. And I feel like as a kid, you know, when like a guy I had a crush on or a friend just, you know, did something that I didn't like, I for a long time, I remember when I was a kid, just be like, kind of give myself negative self-talk. Like I would just be like, why does this always happen to me, like victimizing myself. And the older I got and the more I think I steered away from just the fixation of it, really helped me, persevere. That saying, happening for me, not to me, I believe my ex-boyfriend slash like he's one of my best friends, I think he said that to me or like showed me that kind of mantra, and it really just stuck with me, because it aligns so clearly, you know, with how things happen to you in your life. Like a lot of people say like, or like everything happens for a reason, like that type of, I think, mentality allows what I used to think as uncomfortable as just lessons. Like you really have to feel into what that means versus just saying it. You know what I mean? Like I've gotten so good, I think, at dealing with the discomfort because I've gone through so much discomfort. Like it's kind of sadly like natural for me. Like these last 4 years of moving a bunch of schools, like moving so many apartments around LA, like I've been in such an uncomfortable situation for so long that I have choices. I can either, you know, cry about it for hours. I can either like cry and detox and really like try and push myself forward with, you know, dealing with it in healthy ways and surrounding myself with good people, or I can like ignore it. You know what I mean? I have those choices. Everyone has those choices, but it's just how you choose, I think, to deal with it. You know I love myself. I know that I'm a good person, you know, and I think I kind of just unconsciously remind myself to remember that when it gets really hard. You know,
this is a good segue to this question. So I was looking on your Instagram. I love it.
No, I saw you put like caption. That's so sweet of you.
I love it. I'm like, oh my God. I love everything about your Instagram. I mean, like Paige and I like fangirl over your generation, because we just think y'all are so cool. And like, and your whole Instagram is like, oh, this is why they're so cool.
Thank you.
So I have a question. So in February, you posted a longer caption on one of your posts, and it was about your feeling for yourself at that moment in life. And I have it because it's just so beautifully written. And you wrote, cry so fucking much, scream, laugh, and truly follow where this joy. Trust that you know what you need to do. Love is more than just a feeling. Love is more than just feeling good. Love can be super fucked up, confusing, hurtful, and brutal. It is our greatest teacher that pushes us past our boundaries of any realm. Surround yourself with all that makes you feel abundance and challenged. Oh my God, I need to put this on my like bathroom wall.
Oh my God, thank you.
So I'm just curious to know, how has your journey in loving yourself evolved since February?
Oh my God, so I wrote that, I believe that post was on my birthday of this year.
Oh, okay.
And my birthday this past year was at a very radical time in my life. I had just split up with like the love of my life. Like right before that, I was entering like another quarter of school, where I think this is where too I finally like committed to gender studies, and I was just dealing with a lot of discomfort. It was a weird time, but I think too, it's always like cold on my birthday. Like my birthday's in February, and in LA it's been an insane heat wave, and I got to like go to the beach and it was hot on my birthday for like the first time ever. And I was with just like a really great group of my friends, and I had just a lot of self, like individual time to really think about my life. And since then, I mean, I still stand by everything I said then. And I think that how my self-love has just grown and evolved since then is continuing to face, and not even face, but I think continuing to go deeper into feelings that either are going on with me or those around me. Like something I really realized at that point, and even now, is you know, a lot of negative emotions, whether it's anger or irritation or just like something negative towards somebody else or even to yourself, I've been asking myself, okay, well, what is like past that feeling? Like, that is the initial reaction that, you know, I seem to be having to the situation, but what's past that? It's usually because I'm really hurt, you know, and why am I hurt? What's past that? It's because I care, you know? And, you know, I was separated from my boyfriend at that time and I was really hurt by it. But at the same time, I've been through breakups before and I hate that whole process, but I was trying to uplift myself in a different way because it was just like a different kind of breakup that I hadn't had before, where it was actually positive and like very uplifting. And when I was going through those, you know, levels of why am I feeling this way, and I got to that caring, loving part of it, it shifted my whole, I feel like, premise of like why we get sad or feel so much hurt is because we love so much. Like, it's this weird balance.
Oh, I love
that.
You
know what I mean? Like, so I feel like when I've been helping other people, you know, and they're like, Leah, like, I'm really upset and it just hurts. And like, I don't want to feel this way anymore, you know? And like, of course not. Like, who hates to feel, everyone hates to feel that way. It doesn't feel good. But if you rework that idea of hurt and think like, no, I'm processing, I'm feeling so much because I love this thing so much, then if I didn't care about it, I wouldn't be feeling so much, you know what I mean? And so it's kind of beautiful to help kind of navigate your own feelings in that way. And it really helped me then process whenever I'm going through something uncomfortable, because I know that on the other side of that discomfort is just my ability to care and love something so much. Like, it goes past the want or the need for it. It's just like, no, this person or this thing is part of me. And because of that, I'm going to feel as much as I'm going to feel about it. And that it's a level of like surrender, I feel like, to feeling that I like never understood before, because I was always just trying to like get through it or, you know, talk down on myself about it. But it's like, no, feel as much as you want because you care about it. One day you're probably not going to care about it, you know, and those more sad or feelings that you think are more negative are going to go away, and then you have nothing, you know. Then that's when you're evolved at a bigger level, because you're like, you're just, you've moved on from it completely. Like, enjoy the hurt of it, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. You know what I mean? Enjoy the sadness, the cries, like the pain of it, because yeah, this was a part of you. This was these moments in your life where you get hurt, help, I think, just connect you to yourself, because you're analyzing like, this is shit I really care about. And I like now have to let go of it. And change and evolution and all of that is really, really hard to do. There's no like rule book on it. There's no like, you know, guidebook or anything. You kind of just have to feel it and let all of the waves just like crash on you. Like, it really hurts. It sucks. But
man, as a Virgo, like, I'm like, yes, I want this, but I am so terrified of this.
Yeah.
And like letting go of control.
No. And that's the thing. I'm an Aquarius, and I have a horrible, horrible relationship with change. Like,
but that's what I thought you'd be okay with it, because you're Aquarius. Right. It's more.
Have a really hard time with change. I like control. I like, you know, knowing what's going to happen. And when things, you know, are different or they become uncertain or they become unstable for me, I get really, really uncomfortable and scared. But I think.
What's your Chinese zodiac? Do you know the animal?
I think I'm a rabbit.
Ah.
A rabbit. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know like what that means.
They're very adaptable. Quick to change. Lucky.
See, but I'm not good at it. Like, I just
you are, because you just gave us like a whole TED talk, and I'm like, yes, cool, I'm all about this. Where do I buy the book?
Just because I'm like, well, I'm well in communication about it does not mean I'm good at it whatsoever. it's hard. It's really hard. But, you know, these are just things I write in my journal and I try and like teach to myself, because I know what I need to do. You know what I mean? But it's hard. It's uncomfortable. It's scary. It's unknown. Like, I like knowing mm-hmm. what's going to happen next.
A couple of things that I was thinking. One is when I was in middle school, I remember I saw this sign somewhere, and this was like, I think, you know, middle school, just like really emo, a lot of, for my generation, it was like boy band central and Britney and Christina. And I just remember it saying the sign that was like, I would have rather have loved and have lost than have never loved. Right. And then I also think about when I was in college, a professor actually was, I forgot how it came up, but he was saying that if an angel were in heaven and had the opportunity to come down to earth, even if it meant they were going to have an extremely painful life full of suffering, they would still choose to go just to feel that capacity of emotion that the human like realm has.
Absolutely.
And that also really impacted me in college, because then again in college, when there are all of these tumultuous relationships and breakups and heartache, and I remember putting, like, that was a huge perspective for me. I was like, oh dang, like I can see that though, because of what you're saying, like the amount of love that went into that, then that deep hurt and pain.
Yeah,
like you wouldn't have traded that.
Happy feelings. I think, especially in my like quote that you guys liked, like love is not just happy. Literally, like what you're saying, love, like it's not that you're just done with any kind of love. Like it's still there. It's a different part of it that we don't like to address and feel.
Right. So Leah, I spent 10 years in the Bay Area, which I know is where you're from as well. And you shared with us how growing up you identified predominantly with your white side, though you were in a diverse neighborhood, you still felt like you were treated a little differently. Then in college, you got to discover your other identities and become part of those communities more. But now you're down in Southern California. So people from Northern California and Southern California are always comparing the two different cultures because they are quite different. I want to know for you now that it's different times of your life, but you lived in two different areas, what the big differences were culturally when it comes to beauty and how that impacted you.
Yeah. I think that what I loved about having more of my like foundation of beauty and just life in the Bay Area is it's definitely a lot more of a smaller community kind of lifestyle. LA is very spread out and there's a lot of different areas. And while I do think the Bay Area and LA, they both have so many different communities, beauty, I think, more laid back, I would say. I think that I didn't, or I mean, it used to be like a very like wearing no shoes. Similarly, that's, I think, what I saw around and everything. And, but at the same time, I've always been like a very like fashion forward, like expressing myself kind of person. And I would show up like at school in these like very elaborate outfits. And I would get the question like, Leah, like, where are you going? Like, we're just at like school, like, where are you going? And I was just like, what do you mean? Like, I'm here. Like, this is what's normal for me. So I definitely, you know, just wanted to dress to impress myself. And that was really fun to do, even if it was in, you know, my small town of Berkeley. And then, yeah, I came to LA and, oh my God, LA. I mean, it's where, like, I was one of, I'm sure, tons of people in Berkeley who were like that. And then all of those, like, few people usually come to LA. And everybody in LA is like that. Like, it's all of that. And I mean, I don't know. I've definitely been, in terms of how I look, at least in the last, I'd say, like, 10 years, I definitely, like, don't really give a fuck. Like, I am thankful that I didn't get into the impression of LA that I think a lot of, especially in my generation, feel that they have to live up to and kind of show for themselves. But yeah, in LA, it's definitely a, like, much more of a, like, a production or like a show, like a performance to show yourself.
Is it more pressure?
Yes.
Yeah.
It definitely is. I don't really succumb to it, but I know that a big thing in LA that I've seen is, you know, it could be, you know, young 20-year-olds my age, or even I've seen, like, high schoolers, and, like, having designer, like, material things is, like, a really big thing. Like, even if you live in, like, a studio apartment, like, it's weird. It's like, it's very material focused.
Oh man, how do you date in LA? Because I dated a dude from LA and I was like, yeah, this is gonna be the last one, bro. Like, I cannot deal with this because I'm from New York, which is so different. It's not even California. Yeah. So to a New Yorker dating an LA dude, it was like blowing my mind.
I mean, dating, let alone like friends, like people in general are just really, really weird here and get kind of surprised even when like they find out that I'm just like a lot more genuine. Like they're like, I've had so many people say to me like, oh, you're actually like really cool. And I'm like, thank you.
Oh my God. That sounds like a quote from Mean Girls or something.
Yeah. No, it's like passive aggressive, kind of like a microaggression, but like, thanks. But a lot of things that me and the few friends I have we talk about is that a lot of relationships here are very transactional. So it's very much about like, what does this friend, like, what can you do for me in terms of like your popularity, your with your beauty level, you know, like what can you provide for me? Do you have like a lot of followers on, you know, TikTok and are very well known? Are you rich? Are you friends with this person who knows like Kylie Jenner? Like, you know, it's just
it's the hustle of living in a big city.
Yeah, where can I get in there? I think is the biggest thing. But I think that's also in a weird way what attracted me to LA is that hustle aspect. Like everybody here is on their grind, which I appreciate, you know? And I mean, they have to, it's fucking expensive, but like, so is the Bay Area, you know? But the difference I think with the Bay Area in terms of that sense is it's a lot more neighborhoody, family oriented, inherited kind of money and stuff. And here it's like, no, I'm gonna work, I'm gonna network, especially like I'm gonna go to these different events and try to get myself shown in that way. And it's definitely a lot of pressure and goes with, you know, how one is choosing to present their beauty. And then in order to be, I think, recognized, like, I think that's a big thing. It's like, okay, if everybody's expressing their beauty in this cool, expressive way with all these, you know, cool styles and stuff, like, then you need to stand out, you know, 10 times more. And I'm in the process of, you know, hopefully getting into the modeling industry, and like that's bizarre. very competitive, and with kind of how I want to navigate it, it's a lot more radical, and I'm coming from it in a much more genuine and inclusive way where I just want to like connect with people and not just show this, be this like mannequin and be like, you should look like this. Like that side of modeling is not how I've wanted to approach it. But yeah, I think LA and the Bay Area, they're both very well-known cities, but one in terms of beauty seems to be more based on the performance of it versus the Bay Area.
I think like you hit it when you live in a big city and things are transactional.
Yes.
How you look
Yep.
plays a huge part of how far you're going to get in the game. And like in New York, that's definitely how it was. And like, even when you go to parties, it's all about like, what do you do? What do you do? And it took me a long time to like, when I left New York, people were like, why do you ask people what they do? Because in New York, that's just how, that's just normal. When you meet somebody, hey, nice to meet you. What do you do? You
know, no, they do that here too.
And then like, I don't
have a job right now. Like, I don't do shit. Like I, like in terms of like working and stuff. And that's so funny you bring that up too. Like this really interesting concept I remember learning in gender studies, which I never even thought of. Like, we ask people, what do you do for a living? Like, yeah. Basically, like if you think about that sentence, like, what are you doing in order to live, you know? And it's like, what, like, so without this like career, I would like not be alive, you know? Like, I just think it's interesting how so much, yeah, with that.
But it comes down to what you just said is transactional, yeah. Right? So it's yeah. Like, it, and you might be cool and we might be friends, but I want to know what you do, what, where do I fit into this? Sure, and then also like, how do I connect you to somebody else? And yeah. Like, even now I still do it. Like,
really?
It's something I have to unlearn because I'm here yeah. In Seattle, like, well, I guess Seattle's like, it's a tech hub, but I think when you travel abroad, that's when it hits yeah. You. When you meet, especially when you meet Europeans, like yeah. They never talk about work.
Yeah, yeah. And I think too, it's hard for me to kind of analyze beauty other than how I experienced it more of as like a kid, just because like, I think as an adult living in the Bay Area, I'm sure it's, yeah, I think it's becoming a lot more tech-based and, you know, it's a different life. Like my sister, she's decided to stay in the Bay Area. She lives in San Francisco now, but I'm sure for her too, like being an adult versus a kid and where beauty kind of lies within that, like one with a kid as an influence more, and then one as an adult as like, yeah, utilizing like the tools and the transactions and having it kind of catered more to your career. I think that shift is very interesting. Yeah.
Gosh, I'm so glad that I spent my 10 years in California in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Hearing this, I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have the energy to keep with that type of a culture.
Yeah.
So Leo, we have the best time talking with you, learned so much from you. We're totally love your generation, as Tamsin shared earlier. So at the end of each episode, we like to ask our guests what their beauty legacy is. What is your beauty legacy?
You know, this question was about to come.
I know, but I forgot.
That's good because it's literally like whatever the first thought that pops in your mind when you say this, that's the one.
I think, yeah, my beauty legacy is to always be as open as you can for things to just like radically shift, I think, is my beauty legacy. And it's an ongoing process and I'm barely at like step 2 out of the 1,000, but to just like enjoy it. Yeah, I think like be prepared, I think, for the change as much as you can, be open to it, but also just to follow the joy of it. Like always, even when things are hard, just to really keep joy in your life and at least surround yourself with like the little things that just make you laugh and smile, because it's just fun and it feels good. So that's my legacy.
I love all this.
The stuff I said, I'll leave it at that.
Oh my God, this was so amazing, Leah, because when you came on board, we didn't really get a chance to like talk and chat and get to know you. And I think the first time I really got to know you is when you were interviewing me for mm-hmm. your class.
Yeah.
And your questions were so thoughtful and deep and like, and I usually don't like people and I'm very hard on people. So this is like, you know, I was so impressed. And I'm like, who is this woman? Like, I need to know more about her. And so you're an incredible person. And like, I wish you all the best. And like, I've learned so much from you during this hour. And I want like our followers to stay connected with you. So we're going to have all your information in the show notes, but like, you know, tell them this episode comes out much later, but tell them where they can find you and how they can connect with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. My Instagram is, it's my middle name. It's Hazel Abramson. And in my Instagram, I have like all my links to my modeling portfolio, my email and my number and everything. Like I'm very open. So I'll make sure to like give you guys all of that to connect with everybody. But yeah, I'm so happy that I was able to be a guest. This was so much fun. And it was, yeah, it was fun to learn more about you guys too. Obviously, I've been able to learn more about you throughout my time working and stuff. And that's been really fun and interesting to just pair with them, like how you guys, you know, navigate all the guests and stuff. So it's been really, really fun. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Leah.
Thank you.
All right. Leah. Take care.
Too.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Well, that's it for today. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating, subscribe, and share it with your friends. You can follow us on Instagram at @beautyasabirthright and say hello. If you're interested in learning more about Taoist face reading, head over to elementalarchetypes.com and follow Dr. Tamsin on Instagram at @elementalarchetypes. If you like to explore beauty through your own hands, you can visit yangface.com. You may also explore Paige's Instagram at yang.face for tutorials, Chinese medicine theory, and candid thoughts on cultural appreciation.